Please be seated. We begin our afternoon with Bent Barrel Inc. versus Sands, case number 56-100. Please state for the record appearances and whether you wish to reserve any time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Bob Piccoli. I represent Bent Barrel Inc., and I'll refer to them as Bilbo's throughout this hearing. And I have my son sitting as a representative of the corporation, and also he is a partner in our law firm. To begin with, I'd like to point out that in 2009, this court had before it the case of Flamingo Paradise Gaming versus Channel. The Southern Nevada Health District was a party to that case. At the time, the issue before you was whether or not the Nevada Clean Indoor Air Act met facial constitutionality. In that case, you bifurcated the statute, turned it into part criminal and part civil. You declared that the criminal part had to have what you referred to as a higher standard that it had to meet in order to determine its constitutionality. In doing so, you said that higher standard was whether vagueness permeates the text. And then you went on to say, when the statute involves criminal penalties or constitutionally protected right, the second approach involves a higher standard of whether vagueness permeates the text. You went on in your description of your discussion of how you were going to handle the case. You ruled that the criminal part was unconstitutional. And in doing so, you said, we conclude that the vagueness permeates the NCIAA text in that it fails to provide sufficient notice of what conduct is prohibited and allow for arbitrary enforcement. With regards to both notice and arbitrary enforcement, the statute fails to adequately define to whom the act is enforced against. While it is clear that a person cannot smoke in a restricted area, it is unclear that a person cannot, if there is an obligation to affirmatively prevent smoking by a business owner. The statute fails to provide guidelines as to what action is required and how the statute is enforced. And therefore, it creates the possibility of arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. You went on to say, vagueness also permeates the NCIAA's text by failing to define several terms included in the statute that do not have a plain meaning. These terms include smoking paraphernalia and large room. For example, as one court has recognized, the term smoking paraphernalia is too vague because the reasonable parameters of exactly what constitutes such equipment are unstated and potentially boundless. So at that point, you were saying that you're finding trouble with the constitutionality. But here again, you limited yourself to a facial examination. You then went on to make comments concerning the doctrine of as applied. In other words, how and what would happen in the event this statute was applied to an individual business. Now, In this instance, you have to remember that Bent Barrel Inc. Bilbo's raised their constitutional right to commercial free speech from day one when the investigators walked into Bilbo's. The bartender manager on premises said, "We use our ashtrays and our matches as advertisement, and we have done so for over a decade."
Mr. McCullough, you don't think that's somewhat misleading, though, to a customer who would come in to see ashtrays and matches in a place like Bilbo's? I've been in Bilbo's, so I know what the setup is there. Answer that about the misleading with ashtrays. I know that you're saying it's for advertising purposes, but if I came in there not knowing it and I saw ashtrays and matches, I might light a cigar or a cigarette.
That's totally a possibility, but the other side of that is people take matchbooks. Matchbooks had all the addresses of Bilbo's and all the information of Bilbo's. The ashtrays did too. And in the record, you'll find that many ashtrays were taken from Bilbo's. It's not something that sits there forever. In fact, there's testimony in the record that Bilbo's went through cases of ashtrays. Now, that's something people do collect. They walk out of the premises with them, but it happened to be one of the only methods the Bilbo's used to advertise. But in any event, rather than getting caught up in all this, the judge on the lower court found that defendant Bent Barrel Inc.'s advertising of its business on matchbooks and ashtrays concerns lawful activity protected by the First Amendment. Now, once we have that finding, it falls back into your analysis that deals with the permeation of the statute with vagueness. And that's exactly what standard you have to apply now, because you're dealing with a constitutional issue. And you've stated that clearly in your decision, that if it involved a criminal activity or, and you made it very clear, involved a constitutional right, then you had to apply the higher standard. You've already applied the higher standard, and you know the statute fault.
But would it be appropriate then, let's say that you're right, that it's good advertising, people like the matches and the ashtrays, there should be a sign in Bilbo's that says no smoking?
There is a sign in Bilbo's that says no smoking. It follows the exact letter of the law. Bilbo's posted a sign at the entranceway just as required by the statute, and the statute then goes on to say an owner must remove its ashtrays and smoking paraphernalia. It doesn't say matches. But what happened is the health district came in and cited Bilbo's for failure to remove its ashtrays and its matches.
And or for employees not requiring those who would innocently light up to extinguish their smoking paraphernalia, correct?
Say that again, please.
Did anyone on the staff of Bilbo's, when individuals would perhaps innocently see a match and an ashtray and light up, wasn't there an obligation on the employees to say, there's no smoking here?
No. There's nothing in the statute that says that. And you not only does the statute not say it, you said it in your decision. You actually said that it's obvious that smokers violate the statute, but then you went on to say, but is an owner violating the statute if he tell them not to smoke?
How about if an owner were to stand by and light up him or herself in that situation? Which I think the record supports in this case.
I think one of the things I'd like to say in answer is that if you look at the statute itself, it says the health district shall enforce the provisions of this act. That's in the body. If you go over to the civil side where you have the civil penalty, it again repeats, the health district shall enforce. So,
Mr. McCauley, as you're talking about the enforcement, that kind of leads us right into Central Hudson and talking about reasonable fit requirements. how do we deal with the, what may be seen by some as a reasonable fit as to these requirements?
How do you achieve the
No, how do you deal with that issue under Central Hudson,
sorry,
as we talk
Honor,
about commercial
I'm
speech?
I'm having a hard time hearing.
I'm pointing you to Central Hudson and their position of reasonable fit of regulations as we're dealing with this paraphernalia, as we're dealing with speech versus, well, smoking, which doesn't have the same standard as speech, the regulation of that.
You're saying regulation, and I'm not sure that I have ever seen any regulations that deal with the...
Oh, it flat out says you can't smoke. That's the first part.
Okay.
You're arguing that there's a First Amendment right. And I'm saying how is there a reasonable fit as the regulation that, quote, impacts the speech that you're talking about under the Hudson case?
First of all, what impacts it is when you have to remove the ashtray and the matches. That impacts a First Amendment right.
And that right, counsel, is the commercial free speech right.
Yes, a commercial free speech right.
But we didn't say in Flamingo what standard would be applied when that is the constitutional right being asserted. We didn't abrogate the evaluation of commercial free speech, did we?
All I can say is you said specifically if it involves a criminal penalty or a constitutionally protected right, the second approach involves a higher standard of whether vagueness permeates the text.
And when, as in this case,
it applies immediately. In other words, you've already applied it to the constitutional portion of the criminal act. The same standard now applies to the First Amendment right.
We didn't reach that issue. We resolved Flamingo on a facial challenge. The Flamingo opinion is citing a number of other conflicts which we did not reach. And the question that we raised in Flamingo was, it's an as-applied question.
I'm saying that it's before you right now.
Okay. Then the question is, when the constitutional right being asserted for protection is commercial free speech, why doesn't this court apply the standard for evaluating commercial free speech to matches and ashtrays that you would be deprived of under the law?
Yes, and I say it comes into play immediately using your standard.
Isn't the standard the one that is always applied for other commercial free speech? We didn't abolish all of the commercial free speech jurisprudence.
I agree. I think that does not work here because you've already applied the standard. I would like to go on to the portion of the decision where you said, eventually, this statute is going to reach an as-applied situation. And when you did that, you said, we note that the statute contains numerous defects and may be subject to as-applied challenges once the statute is enforced against a particular party. But it is important in the context of a facial challenge review to consider these hypothetical situations. For example, as noted above, under the language of the statute, uncertainty arises regarding whether the statute imposes upon business owners an obligation to stop a person who is smoking in violation of the statute. As another example, ambiguity concerning what is included as smoking paraphernalia under the statute may potentially provide a basis for an as-applied challenge. Now, I would point out to you to what has happened in this case. All your questions of what could happen did happen. Now, remember, the health district was party to the original case. So what happens? You were warning them, if you get involved with trying to make an owner take your burden away, your duty under the statute, you're looking at unconstitutionality. You then went even further. You said smoking paraphernalia doesn't meet the criteria. And once it's applied, Even so, it's now unconstitutional again, as applied to Bilbo's. In other words, the ambiguity is there. The vagueness is there. And so what happens? You end up with a situation where they applied just exactly what you were telling them not to do.
Now, mind you, Pauling, you have about a minute left. Do you wish to keep some time for rebuttal?
Excuse me?
Do you wish to keep some time for rebuttal? Because you're almost using up all your time.
I haven't got much choice, do I? I'm going to take one more shot. I'd like you to understand that in this case, the as applied, you had a situation where the statute has been arbitrarily and discriminatorily enforced. The health district from day one has never cited or created any kind of a civil lawsuit against a smoker, the culprit, the person that puffs on a cigarette. They have never cited a casino who does not have the proper name casino in its proper name. And that is in the statute. It requires a unrestricted. And then the other is against the bar using other types of receptacles, since we never had a definition for the statute and for paraphernalia. I have a little trouble with the idea that we had an argument on the equal protection. I did not hear any questions from you, and I would like to address it if I may.
Mr. Piccola, you are now out of time. I'm going to give you 3 minutes on rebuttal at this point.
Good afternoon. Terry Coffin, Micah Eccles, Marquis Arbach Coffin, on behalf of Dr. Lawrence Sand, Chief Health Officer for the Southern Nevada Health District. I think the questions today are pertinent, and I want to pick up with something where I think my colleague left off in his reply brief, and that is something that you're getting to, Justice Hardesty, about the Central Hudson analysis. And there is probably an argument to be made that Central Hudson may not apply because there's nothing within the statute that seeks to regulate speech. But don't get me wrong, we get to the same end analysis as to what the statute says. But since this statute does nothing within its face to try to limit speech or expression, then my colleague could be right that Central Hudson could not apply. I think if Central Hudson applies, we've outlined all four factors, we meet those factors, and we get to the exact same conclusion. So if you want to take the alternative path as suggested by my colleague, we get to the same place, and that is whether or not this statute is so vague as to be unenforceable. This court already clearly held in Flamingo Gaming, as my colleague pointed out, that the statute survives a facial challenge on the vagueness permeating the statute, and you clearly found that the civil aspects of the statute are not unconstitutionally vague and pointed out several examples in which it can be enforced without question as to what the statute means or what is required of a person of average intelligence when reading this statute as it relates to its enforcement. And I suggest to you that that's exactly what's happened in this case. The Southern Nevada Health District was presented with a ballot initiative that ultimately became law that, as this court has noted, has some issues within it. Some things are left undefined. And so the health district, through its administrative powers and the authority granted under the statute, developed its own set of rules and regulations in how to enforce the statute. Chief among those, other than those delineated directly in the statute, is the obligation of an owner of an establishment to make the premises non-smoking. And for this, for Bilbo's to stand up here, and that means we just have to post a sign. That's clearly not making your establishment non-smoking. It also, the statute implies, and the spirit of the law clearly indicates that owner of that establishment must tell a patron with that lights up in violation of the act, you can't smoke here. That is what the judge found below, and that is what is reasonably implicated by the statute and allowed the Southern Nevada Health Authority under Section 5 of the statute and their inherent powers to make administrative rules out of legislative mandates.
Wouldn't it be easier, though, if it said it, you know, so that we could say then to Mr. Piccoli, it says what it says, instead of it says and we're not sure what it says?
I agree with you that if we had had some input in the drafting of the statute, that perhaps we could have crafted it better. But that does not obviate what is clear within the statute, an intent to make certain areas as designated on this initiative to be non-smoking.
And Mr. Coffin, what happens?
No, please go ahead. Okay.
What happens if a patron, there's no smoking signs, and a patron lights up and the bartender says, now, you can't smoke, and the patron says, tough, I'm going to smoke. Then
number one, that situation is no different than any other bartender or a manager would encounter when someone else violates another rule, like having a minor at the bar, having a dog at the bar. You tell them that it's prohibited. If they fail to comply, you ask them to leave, and if they don't leave, then you take the next action you deem necessary, which may be calling law enforcement authorities.
Okay.
So it's a simple progression that they want to say is not, since it's not, every action is not mandated within the statute, then it cannot be enforced against us, and I think that violates the spirit and intent.
And I believe Justice Gibbons has laid the foundation for what my question was going to be, and that is it safe for us to imply, and admittedly it would be an implication in the statute, that there are certain duties or responsibilities that establishment owners, bartenders, or the like have under the statute, even if they are not specifically set forth therein?
If the question is it fair for the court to imply, I think the answer to that is yes, because it is within the authority of the health district to take legislative mandate and create administrative rulings that implement that mandate. And so I think it's fair for you to imply, and it's certainly reasonable for the health district to take the actions that they did in this case. As it relates to the issues of discrimination and how this matter has been arbitrarily enforced, we need to remember how we got here. Shortly after the statute was enacted, the health districts began a plan to implement the statute. And as part of that, they received complaints from the public, and they sent out notices of violation to dozens of establishments informing them that their practices were not in compliance. Upon further review, we have three or four people who refused to comply, one of which being Bilbo's. Two of those ended up in lawsuits, one the case that we're here today, and one other one that was settled shortly after it was filed. So for Bilbo's to now come in here and say that somehow they're being discriminated against on an arbitrary basis is simply without merit. They, quite frankly, asked for this lawsuit. They got it. And here we are for this court to finish the trinity of these cases and determine what the implications of that suit will be. So it's difficult for me to sit and listen to them claim that they've been discriminated against. They've raised no issue of malice. They've raised no issue of ulterior motive that the health district has in going to Bilbo's rather than Irene's or the Town Center Lounge, where they were the subject of the other complaints. And I would note that, as we cited in our briefs in the Cook versus City of Price, that the mere fact that there may be selective enforcement is not in itself make a statute unconstitutional. In fact, as was cited, I believe, below, it's perfectly appropriate for officials to seek to prosecute a particularly egregious violation, thereby deter the conduct of others. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what happened here, because there was no selective enforcement here, but the fact that Bilbo's is here and that there's not a dozen others does not make the statute unconstitutional in any way, shape, or form. So if we get to the central part of if we go back to the central Hudson analysis, we have to remember that advertising on ashtrays and matchbooks is not the sole form of advertisement available to Bilbo's. And commercial speech is not entitled to the same protections as normal speech. There are limitations because the government has a valid interest in limiting commercial speech when, as under the four factors in central Hudson, it deems it falls within those categories. And looking at the Hudson factors, we meet every one of them. There's a substantial interest in the government in promoting the health and safety. The removal of matches and ashtrays is a reasonable restriction on that right of speech. And the reasonable fit analysis, as modified in central Hudson by Board of Trustees, is perfectly reasonable to ask them to take their matches and ashtrays away and, in turn, use swizzle sticks, napkins. If they want to put their address on a glass and hand that out, that's their free.
The shot glasses are okay then.
Well, that was their initial ruse at getting around, say, it's not an ashtray, it's a shot glass. But I'd submit to you, and it's common knowledge, that if you hand it to someone and say, use this as an ashtray, it's an ashtray. Call it a shot glass, call it a double ceramic cup, call it a condiment container, call it what you want.
Well, what if they had simply handed the slot glass to the patron and didn't say anything?
Well, if they're handing it to every patron, that would be one thing, but they're only handing it to these ceramic cups or shot glasses to people who light up a cigarette. And so it's not like they're doing this for every patron on every occasion. They're only doing it when people light up a cigarette. And they're doing it for the express purpose of calling
it. So your argument is that they can't satisfy the as-applied challenge in this case because of the words used in distributing the shot glass.
I would agree with you in that you're calling it a shot glass, and I submit that when you hand it to someone to use an ashtray, it's not a shot glass anymore. It's now an ashtray. And the ceramic cups that were at issue at trial, we established in the record that there was no other purpose for those ceramic cups. They were used for nothing other than to be used as ashtrays. And the fact that they stopped using shot glasses and switched to ceramic cups, I think, is irrelevant to the analysis. But I would agree with your proposition is that the proposition is that they cannot meet their burden of showing that the statute is unconstitutional as applied because of the language of the statute.
So would Bilbo's be in violation of the statute if they handed matchbooks to their patrons and said, take these with you. We're just trying to advertise our place.
That's an excellent question, one that I hadn't thought of. I would say that they would be, in the sense that there's no other...
It would be what?
They would be in violation of the statute, in the sense that there's no other valid reason to hand a bar patron a pack of matches unless it is to promote smoking. And if the follow-up was handing them matches but making it clear and enforcing the fact that they could not smoke in your establishment, my answer to the question may well be different. But as I think we established below, there is no valid reason for them to have matchbooks in a bar other than smoking.
Well, how about with matchbooks? I know I don't smoke, and I collect matchbooks to light my barbecue, you know, matches or fireplace or something, you know, like that. So that's not smoking, and I guess it could theoretically be advertising as well.
It could be, and again, if the matches are being used as solely as promotional, not in conjunction with smoking, then they would not be paraphernalia, I guess, as we would define that in the statute. Mm-hmm.
So will the health district sit with the Piccoli family and make sure that what they can do is correct and not correct? I mean, is this a situation that can be corrected?
No, this is a situation that can be corrected. They need to correct it on a management level, though. The management of this establishment needs to inform people that there's no smoking allowed, and they need to enforce that, as the judge found below. If they're going to use matches as some type of promotional item, then they need to clearly designate that as such. And if I'm missing the gist of your question, I apologize, but they are not being selectively singled out on this issue.
If Justice Gibbons walks into Bilbo's, he's going to take a pack of matches, and he doesn't smoke.
Correct.
So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with them passing out matches to people like Justice Gibbons. It's a smoker, I don't think anybody on this bench smokes, but if somebody did smoke and they were taking it to smoke, then it's a violation, according to you, of the Clean Air Act.
If they're being used for promotional purposes of smoking outside in a lawful area, then it would not. But if it's being used to facilitate smoking within their establishment that is otherwise non-smoking, I would say...
So is the judge's ban too broad in the sense that he barred all ashtrays and all matchbooks for all purposes? Should the judge's ban have said... You can't distribute matchbooks and ashtrays and permit smoking?
That would have been an acceptable ruling had that been raised below, but this is not an issue that was ever raised below in conjunction with the arguments raised by Bilbo. So hypothetically, could the judge have crafted an order that would have preserved any free speech rights that they may have had? Yes, but the judge's order was crafted upon the record that was created below. And she did not do that, and there was no evidence in the record to suggest that Bilbo's was using this for anything other than to facilitate smoking within their premises.
But it does kind of get to the concern about the ambiguity of smoking paraphernalia. Now, I don't think the Flamingo opinion decided whether smoking paraphernalia in as-applied cases is ambiguous. It simply cited a bunch of examples for the possibility. But in applying a smoking paraphernalia interpretation in an as-applied case, shouldn't the court look at that in the most narrowest of senses, consistent with the objectives of the Clean Air Act? I don't think the clean air proponents were saying don't distribute matches. They were saying don't smoke.
Correct. And that's an excellent point, but I think the statute, the interpretation of the statute under the vagueness for all purposes requires a person of...
But that's an as-applied standard. You've referred to that now twice. That's not the standard in a facial challenge. That's not the standard in an as-applied challenge. Silvar is the standard for an as-applied challenge, and the test is entirely different than the test you recite.
And that would be the is it vague in all application, it fails to provide... No, it's just what you just told me, I'm sorry. You're correct in that, and I misquoted the statute in Silvar. And
the test were to apply in an as-applied challenge is in Silvar.
Yes.
And that test is whether it fails to provide notice sufficient to enable ordinary persons of ordinary intelligence to understand the conduct that's prohibited and lacks specific standards, thereby encouraging or authorizing potential arbitrary or discriminatory enforcement. And this is why I posit the question, is the bar against matchbooks the objective of the statute in an as-applied challenge? Doesn't seem to me that it is. It's only when it's used in conjunction with the offending objectives of the statute.
And then with that analysis, I would agree with you. If matchbooks are to be used strictly for promotional purposes, then that...
When this court is examining an as-applied challenge, don't we do so de novo, regardless of whether the argument was made in the court below?
Agreed.
Mr. Coffin, one quick thing on the equal protection. Mr. Piccoli mentioned that. Should we apply strict scrutiny or rational basis reviews on this, and why?
Well, I think from the equal protection basis, it would be it would not be strict scrutiny because we are not dealing with a protected conduct or a suspect class. So with okay. that, I would conclude.
Thank you.
Mr. Piccoli, you have rebuttal. We'll give you 3 minutes.
Mr. Piccoli, as a follow-up to the questions of the last few minutes of the respondent's argument, where we were discussing the breadth, if you will, of the judge's order, am I correct when I quote from the record and say that Judge Adair, in this case, ordered that you keep all ashtrays and matches from the smoking area, and then specifically went on to modify it by saying where smoking is prohibited? What's wrong with that?
You mean with regard to her order?
Mm-hmm.
The real problem with it is she's saying that we have to remove ashtrays and matches. Matches are not covered under the statute, especially if you decide that smoking paraphernalia is too vague.
Well, then she goes on to describe.
But the rest of her order, look at it. The areas where smoking is prohibited shall cease to provide ceramic cups, shot glasses, or other items. Can you define any of those?
Well, she does, in my mind.
Items could be...
Other items to be used as ash receptacles and shall inform customers that smoking is not permitted.
Any items could be anything in the whole place. I mean, that if that lacks definition, I don't know what does. That's arbitrary and that's vague. And then the other part of it is they order our employees to tell them they can't smoke, even when the health district wouldn't do that because they didn't want to put their employees in harm's way. It was okay to put our employees in harm's way. There's something wrong with that. Don't you think when a judge can transfer the duty that the health district has over to somebody that isn't even covered by the statute?
Same would be true if I sat at your bar with a minor child.
Excuse me?
The same would be true. The same analysis would be applied if I sat at your bar with a minor child. It's not your employee's obligation to tell me to take that minor child out of that prohibited area?
I don't think so. I would like to address the equal protection.
Mr. Piccoli, you didn't bring it up when you spoke originally. Counsel wouldn't have an opportunity to respond to it. I think it'd be inappropriate at this point for you to raise that point. It's been briefed.
Do you need me to do it or not?
No.
I would like to just point out that the judge, in her findings, or findings of fact, she said it's okay for the health district to have discretion in enforcement. Then she turned around in her conclusions at number 17 and says selective enforcement is okay. Now, if that isn't the just another way of saying arbitrary enforcement is okay, when you as a court has already said, no, it's not okay. And then the thing is, they did it anyway. And she did it anyway. You guys laid out a perfect roadmap for a judge to follow, and she chose not to do it.
We thank the parties for their arguments this day in terms of shedding light on issues they feel are important. This matter will stand submitted.